beyond a split up or a property division? Has it been applied in cases other than circumstances like Connell or Pennington?
Not yet, Your Honor, and that's part of what we're asking this court to do, again, in a unique position.
So there are two parts to this request, really.
Yes, there are. One is to expand this equitable doctrine, and two, specifically, to allow those in a committed intimate relationship to recover for loss of consortium.
Are there areas where courts have applied equitable principles to a third party who wasn't involved in the transaction requiring equity?
And that, I would say, Your Honor, is a matter of foreseeability, and that we see persons who are involved or who are actually damaged by the negligence of a third party. Here we allege the various defendants, and that we see whether or not those are foreseeable defendants as a result of the actions and the damage caused by those actions. So in my view, that's a matter of foreseeability.
And the New Mexico court adopted foreseeability as the second element of the analysis.
Yes, it did.
Now, it wasn't clear to me, but perhaps you can help me understand, whether the New Mexico court was suggesting that they lay out a number of factors for the first element, right?
Yes.
To determine whether there's a committed intimate relationship. Would that be a decision a jury would make?
Under the New Mexico case, yes, it would be, and that is a question of fact for the jury. And at the trial court, defense counsel argued, well, we don't want to get into the particulars of someone's intimate relationship. And my response to that is, in personal injury cases, we get into people's personal medical records. I don't see what is the difference significantly in that point.
Well, don't we get into their banking records and how they titled their cars and their houses and a lot of things that you wouldn't normally get into?
Right, because the law doesn't allow it. But I would suggest again that when we are in personal injury cases, that it is certainly an examination of many personal things. And this additional inquiry is not any worse than looking at someone's medical record.
But this is an equitable question, as was just discussed, and juries don't decide divorces.
No, they don't. And that's the way that that is set up. And I realize that that is a challenge here. But we're not asking the jury to decide things between two persons engaged in a committed intimate relationship, but rather whether someone was injured, the non-married party, also suffered damage as a result of negligence of a third party.
Okay. I wonder if you could address, underneath this all is a huge policy question of the value of marriage. And the value specifically that the law places on marriage.
Yes, and the defense counsel raised Obergefell in their response brief as we are, again, reiterating by the United States Supreme Court 2 years ago that marriage is a bedrock of American society, and I don't disagree with that. The New Mexico court addressed that and said specifically that it is not a threat to marriage. What it is a recognition of additional types of relationships that persons in our state or our country are engaging in. The sociological evidence indicates that this is on a huge upswing. The Pew Research, the Washington Post articles, this is a commonplace situation that people engage in, such as my clients here, who were engaged.
Well, it may be commonplace. That doesn't mean that they're entitled to compensation. I mean, you know, the law is not only about opening up avenues of remedies and compensation, it's also about limiting.
Indeed, I understand that, Your Honor. And if we go back to Obergefell at page 135, Supreme Court 2596, there's a quote, and it says, "These new insights have strengthened, not weakened, the institution of marriage," when talking about a same-sex marriage, which was, of course, barred before that. And it says, indeed, changed understandings of marriage, and I would say relationships, are characteristic of a nation. Where new dimensions of freedom become apparent to new generations, often through perspectives that begin in pleas or protests, and then are considered in the political sphere and judicial process. What I'm suggesting is there is a sea change among relationships that before people did not reside outside of marriage, and now we do. On the way to marriage, such as my clients did here.
But isn't Obergefell trying to enlarge the marriage tent rather than to encourage people to stay outside of it?
It did try to do that, and I agree, Your Honor. I think this case is the next step in the evolution of the law on recognizing a committed, intimate relationship.
It seems like a step in the opposite direction.
That is, if you propose that marriage is the only recognized intimate relationship between parties, which Washington law suggests is not correct, with respect. And that's the end of my time. Thank you.
Good morning. Nancy Katifax on behalf of Farmers Insurance. We are the URIM interveners for Jessica. She was known as Jessica King at the time, and the uninsured motorists McNaw, Yates, and Smith. I think that the Green case does not need to be abandoned, even if you accept Mr. Vance's argument, because the majority of committed or cohabitation relationships apparently do not fall into the CIR category. And as to those cases, the standard of the majority rule announced in Green would still apply. I think what Mr. Vance is asking is an exception to Green in that respect. And I don't believe that there's a factual, legal, or policy argument to expand the law in that way.
So let me ask you about the factual argument that you've made, because you mentioned it in your brief, and that is that the facts of this case do not establish a committed intimate relationship. It's my understanding from the record that Justin did not have the opportunity to really address that below. So why should we address it on appeal?
Whether he abandoned his motion for summary judgment on the CIR case, we did bring up that there was an issue of fact as to that, because he didn't, the relationship did not satisfy the pooled resource aspect of what a committed intimate relationship needs. And in
what
the
was the posture of the case? Was it your motion for summary judgment or his?
They were both motions. Oh, he moved for summary judgment that he had a CIR. We moved to dismiss because he has no loss of concern.
Established that there was no CIR, though.
Correct.
So if we were to accept the legal position of the other side, the existence of the CIR would need to be determined at the trial court level.
Correct, and that's when I brought up to the trial court who would decide that on the issue with the jury question on that.
But in your motion for summary judgment, was the motion for summary judgment for dismissal on both bases or just on the one that Green controlled?
Our motion for summary judgment was on the basis of Green.
Not on the basis of no CIR?
No. No.
So, it's not too late. I mean, in other words, that's the question on summary judgment. I guess to put it this way is that it doesn't look like we can dodge the Green issue by saying, well, there wasn't any CIR anyway.
No, correct, Your Honor, and I don't intend to do that in this case. My thought was to abandon Green entirely, which is what, from what I understood from Mr. Vance's arguments in his brief, was to overrule Green entirely. But there are the majority of cohabitation relationships that Green would still apply to, and that was my point with that, all of the other relationships that do not qualify.
Well, so what relationships would Green apply to? What are you referring to?
Those cohabitation relationships that do not satisfy the elements of a CIR. Mr. Vance argues
But again, we really can't address the CIR, so I think
okay.
you're better off to focus on the argument related to Green.
Are you telling us that if we agree that a CIR should give rise to consortium damages, Green would still have vitality for a universe of people living together who don't satisfy the requirements for having an equitable division of their assets when they break up?
Well, I'm saying if they do not satisfy the requirements for a CIR, then the policy reasons announced in Green, those are the individuals that shouldn't be allowed for a loss of control.
Well, so are you conceding that if you do satisfy the requirements for a CIR, that Green doesn't apply?
No, I'm not.
It certainly seems that you are.
I was just addressing Mr. Vance's point that Green needs to be completely overhauled. I think he's asking for an exception to Green, specifically for the CIR.
He is. That is what he's asking for, is an exception to Green for a CIR and an expansion of the equitable remedy to a loss of consortium claim.
So we're having a difficulty following exactly what you're trying to say right now. If maybe you want to start over in some way, but the Green really was a discovery rule case, and in the
right.
process of analyzing the discovery rule, they went into this policy
right.
discussion of committed intimate relationships.
I think if extending the law to a CIR in this situation would retract from the policies of marriage, in that we're taking the CIR out of family law and applying it to tort law, to me, there's a big question about the liability of the CIR if there is one to innocent third parties in this situation. For example, if Jessica King at the time had acted negligently and injured an innocent third party, would the CIR then be responsible in tort law for the damages to that innocent injured person to make that person whole? That liability is borne both by the marital community as well as the registered domestic partnership.
I see.
And I do not hear or see or have any argument from Mr. Vance that the CIR should accept that responsibility, even though it's almost a quasi-marriage.
So you're saying that if we were going to move in that direction, we'd have to look at the downsides for the
correct
for the unmarried cohabiting couple as well as the upsides.
I think in tort law, you would have to, it's not just the right to sue and recover, but the right if an individual to the CIR negligently injures an innocent third person, that innocent injured person should be should have the ability.
What does New Mexico have to say about that? Anything?
They do not say anything. To me, the New Mexico opinion sort of cursory discussion of the benefit and the burden to each party, and it sounded to me like it was more in the nature of as between the two parties.
Well, no, they adopt two elements, and one of them is foreseeability, which is the argument that we've just heard on behalf of Mr. Vance.
The foreseeability to me in this case, Your Honor, is has the two prongs in the McCowan case, the foreseeability of whether the duty exists and then the foreseeability of whether the harm is within the scope or the zone of danger of that duty. I think the trial court concentrated on the first aspect to find that there was no duty. And I have a little bit of intellectual trouble analyzing the fact the CIR is unique enough and more like marriage as of all of the other cohabitation relationships that would give it value as and entitle it to a loss of consortium right, but then also hold that third parties should find it reasonably foreseeable that an individual was involved in the CIR relationship, which apparently is not the majority of cohabitation relationships.
Are there any other categories of relationships that you've thought about? I mean, I'm just wondering now that you mentioned that one, whether there are others that arguably might be put forward as being entitled to loss of consortium. And yet, when you look at them, I mean, it's something short of marriage, maybe something in the neighborhood of parent-child or not quite parent-child relationships or friendships or other relative relationships or that sort of thing.
We do have other...
We've lived together for a long time, not as cohabitant couple, but just because we're friends or we're cousins or something.
I don't think the law of loss of consortium is extended to that type of relationship. The grandparent-grandchild relationship currently does not have the loss of consortium right, and would it extend to that? I think that that might be part of the statutory scheme for the grandparent-grandchild loss of consortium, similar to the domestic relation, domestic partnership. The registered domestic partnership has a statutory...
The grandparent had assumed parental obligation. Sometimes when a parent dies, grandparents step in and raise their grandchildren. Would that give rise to a consortium claim?
In the sense of a loss of consortium claim in this state, currently it does not. I'm not aware of any case law that says that should.
I guess the argument would be like in a wrongful death case, that where you have beneficiaries who are statutorily entitled
right.
to sue because they have lost support companionship, et cetera.
And those are statutorily defined beneficiaries who are allowed to bring the loss of consortium claim similar to the registered domestic partnership. That's a statutorily created loss of consortium claim, which also has a statutorily created liability piece to it as well in the whole.
So that's in the statute then, loss of consortium and liability in the, at the domestic partnership.
It is 2606.010, which says that all of the rights and remedies available to married individuals, including responsibilities, do apply to the domestic partnership. So that's the end of my time. Thank you.
Briefly, Your Honors.
Does the law require symmetry between benefits and liabilities?
Generally, no, Your Honor. And the law is a jealous mistress, as a common saying. I understand and acknowledge that. But things do change. And we have seen that in the course of all of our lifetimes as practicing attorneys and judges. Addressing the question
I'm not sure that answers Judge Leach's question. I mean, I hear you saying, well, it really shouldn't have to because that sounds like you're saying that it'd really be good if we have this benefit and there's absolutely no reason to think about liabilities at the same time.
And I'm sorry, that is not my point. What I would say is when the case arises that a partner to a committed intimate relationship is the tortfeasor themselves, there are two sides to the coin that I am arguing today. That's not the issue before this court today, but I...
What about the consortium claim, Boone? The first committed intimate relationship partner who gets tagged with liabilities can be darn surprised and probably doesn't have insurance coverage for it if the other person's driving a car titled in the driver's name.
That may be correct, Your Honor. What I'm saying,
so isn't that more of a kind of policy decision we ought to leave to the legislature so we don't surprise the general population with an unpredicted result?
That is certainly one way to go about it, but here we're asking for an address of the common law and not to change a particular statute or interpret a statute. And so, to me, it is the same side. If I'm in a committed intimate relationship and I drive my partner's car and I'm negligent on my own, and the car is covered through insurance there.
That's not the startling one. The startling one is when your partner is driving your partner's car to go get groceries and is negligent and you get sued.
Yes, I'd probably be also sued if they were, on his own car. Yes. Well, again, that comes back to, is this...
If we follow community property principles for what we do with spouses, that would be the logical result of treating people who aren't married the same as people who are.
Indeed.
And the law hasn't really done that. The law has formed an equitable basis for dividing property when it isn't fair to stiff somebody because there wasn't a marriage license.
Right, and that is one of the attributes of marriage, and I agree with that, Your Honor. But it also could be argued that that is a common car that is used for both parties, depending on what the facts of the case are. Well, my suggestion is that it is entirely possible that that would be the next step, but that is not what we're asking for today. Finally, on the de facto parent claim, I think that is a valid claim regarding people who take in children, either grandparents or foster parents, develop a relationship with these children. They are injured, and they are taken in these homes, and these persons are left to take care of them when they are injured. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next case.